This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
Broadcasting across the state of Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and around the world on the Civic Media app, this is the Dom Salvia Show. And now, here's your host, Dom Salvia.
Not really. It's Dr. Tim Slecker, yes, from Busted Pencils, sitting in for Dom. You know, Dom's taking a little break.
I suppose he deserves it.
He deserves it, you know, but Jess, Civic Media, got some stuff going on that you want to tell the listeners about?
Not anymore.
Oh, that's right. The hour's over.
The hour's over. You'll have to tune back in tomorrow at 4 p.m. to catch the next code word from the Dom Salvia Show. Stick around, though, because I think there's one more in the day.
Okay, so
unless I'm forgetting.
Yeah, we hope not. Second hour of Dom Salvia Show, beginning though, and here we are the day after again, the day after a school shooting. And, you know, we had guest Abby Clements from Teachers Unified to End Gun Violence, also a survivor of the Sandy Hook shooting. She was a second grade teacher at that time, helping us talk about this moment, and here we are again. And I am so thankful, though, too, to have my best friend, colleague, Teacher Joanna from Educators Amplified, Busted Pencils listeners. Yes, it's that Teacher Joanna, always on with us on the show. Teacher Joanna, how are you?
I'm great, and it's really exciting to be on the Dom Salvia Show today.
Yeah, right. You know, it's not welcome back to Busted Pencil. It's the Dom Salvia Show.
I'm really proud of you, Tim. Hello. We haven't had any of that.
I haven't done any. Yeah, I haven't done any of the. But it is. So,
larger audience. Hello.
Hello. Teacher Joanna, though. So, you know, you're here. You did today, the day after. What do you think? I mean, your thoughts yesterday when you heard and.
Well, every time it is extreme, it's shocking. So yes, it does still shock me. It is shocking and it's sad and it's maddening. And, you know, my first reaction actually yesterday, I mean, there's the emotions, right? The reaction, but then it was to reach out to the brand new teachers that I know and check on them. And so in particular, my son's girlfriend is a brand new teacher in the Madison area.
Okay.
It's her first year. And so I was sure to reach out to her because, just it's scary and it's I don't know, but I thought of the young people I know, and so it's my son's girlfriend, his roommate, some of the teachers that I mentor here. So that just happened to be my first thing, was to go check on people. Definitely.
Well, with that though too, right? I mean, thinking about that, yeah, the first year teacher, but you know, you're not a first year teacher, and you said though you're still shocked.
I am, because
I hate to say that's a good thing, but I'm glad you're still shocked.
Yeah, I am. I mean, because it's a major thing every time it happens. So I don't think I'll ever get like hardened to it. And quite honestly, I just think of the massive amounts of pain surrounding it, you know, before, during, after. I'm shocked. So sorry, I don't have, it's almost like that's all I can say.
Right. Well, and you're still shocked, but I mean, reaching out to those first year teachers, particularly like you just said, it's, you know, because, yeah, it is a reality. It's a sad reality. And so what is their feeling there? You know, one of the things we were talking about in the first hour, though, was just the statistics on guns in the home and not being locked up, and the fact that they, you know, end up in some way, shape or form, usually 86% was the statistic from Abby of the school shootings. Those guns came from the home of a family member with that. And so we were talking about, you know, should we be locking the guns up? Should we be required to lock them up? And I had started moving in the direction of going, you know, I could hear somebody saying, but I need my gun for protection. And if it's locked up, I can't get to it. We had a caller kind of point out that, talking about, you know, a safe, you could put your fingerprint and boom, it's right next to you. So there's your protection. But Matt from Middleton's on the phone. Matt, you got a comment on this point of why might people feel the need to have a gun? Matt, welcome to the Don Salvia Show.
Hey guys, thanks for what you do. I grew up in a high crime city, Miami, Florida, in the 80s, and heard gunshots once in a while in class, out coming from outside and stuff. And I grew up still not feeling a need to arm myself. But I find it strange, but I think there's a political side to this, because my parents live out in the country here in Wisconsin, and they'll hear from rural people that they do as much as they can to not go near the city. They see the city as dangerous and scary. And it's right in line with the idea that Democrats are evil because they kill babies. Mm. It's like a political side of that, where they want people to be afraid of each other in America. Mm. And I think that might feed into some of this, because a lot of these people that are hoarding guns are these kind of frightened white men, so to speak, that, that just... It's like a gun obsession, but also a need to just arm themselves for some coming apocalypse or whatever their church is telling them. I don't know where they're getting these things, but I lived in Texas 10 years, and I was at a house where there were guns laying around and they had kids. So yeah, it's complicated, but I think some political things there where they want us to fear each other.
No, Matt, I think what you point out there, Matt, I mean, the culture of fear that really is running out there, the need, I feel the need to protect myself, and then to really put some deep analysis to that. Do you? And why do you feel that way? Because, you know, if you can potentially rationalize that down to the fact that you're not a frontline soldier in the Ukraine, you might come down with a conclusion that, yeah, I don't really need this, but what is it that led me to have that feeling? And then that kind of adds to it. Joanna, what are you thinking there?
Well, I think about, you know, clearly access is too easy for children. And so if we step away from ourselves as adults, how do we view it for children? Because the issue here that we're talking about is that children have too easy of access, right? Mm-hmm. And also that it has become the number one killer of children, gun violence. And so I wonder, you know, when the focus might switch to children in a way, and what we can do, regardless of how we feel and the habits we have and our strong opinions about, you know, ownership. I view this as kind of a different issue. Mm. There's that issue, and then there's the issue of just, are our children in our communities safe due to gun violence?
Due to gun violence, due to the what's easy access. You know, Matt pointed out living in Texas, being in the home where guns were laying around, was what Matt said, in a home where there were children. You know, and somebody going, well, that's rare. I don't know if that's rare or not. I, you know, I, I could.
No, I don't think it's rare. I mean, we have accident. You know, there's all kinds of accidental shootings.
Right.
But right. Even if I weren't just focused on the really terrible outcome, it's just this idea that, you know, there's evidence here that something's not right, and that it's having a harmful effect on our kids. And right. So what are we willing to do about that?
Well, that, yeah, and that's the part. What are we willing to do about that? Because sadly, the conversation seems to very quickly turn into, well, you know, were the escape routes planned? Were the protections set up? Did the bulletproof glass work? It's like, well, okay, wait.
I know. I did read, you know, I read something today where, of course, you know, someone from the school, an administrator, teacher, I can't remember, saying like, oh, the kids did magnificent. And I also remember from Uvalde, the children did so well at being quiet that, yeah. Right, remember almost 400 police officers showed up there and didn't realize that people were in the rooms. And so this idea that kids are really great at these trainings, again, are, you know, it's just, it's hard to contend with, because it's like, okay, great. So you were happy that the children are really good during an active shooter situation. Like in a school, I really want to be celebrating so much more than that, but it's a sad reality.
It's a sad reality. And we point out though, too, is that, you know, there's an acceptance that when you, when you have those conversations, that there's nothing you can do to stop it, you know, and that's the part where we want to come at this and go, no, I, you know, schools are, quote, safe enough right now. Now it's time to stop it. And what are those things that we can do? Not think about, theorize, wish philosophically. What are the hard, concrete things we can do? And something very simple is enforcing if you have a gun in the house and you have children in the house, that access to that gun has to be in the unavailability, that a child can't get to that gun. And we have to enforce that, because that right there, 86% of the guns used that we heard from Abby talking about this, they came from the house of the family of the origin where that started. So, hey, it is Dr. Tim Slecker sitting in for Dom Salvia. Teacher Joanna is here with me from Educators Amplified, and Mark from the SAC. We see you. We'll get you right when we get back.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
It's the Dom Salvia Show. Dr. Tim Slecker, Busted Pencils, sitting in. Joined by my really special, special friend, Teacher Joanna from Educators Amplified. Still talking about the day after school shooting. It's a horrible conversation. We don't want to continue to keep having it. What can we do to stop having it? Definitely, though, want to get to callers. Mark from Prairie du Sac. Mark, what's happening? You got some comments on, you know, we need to not be frightened. Tell me more about that.
We need to give up fear. I mean, because fear, as the Gwen put it in Left Hand of Darkness, she referred to it, you know, fire and fear, good servants for bad masters, and I'm afraid we're letting our fears master itself. I mean, that and get the full context of the comment that J.D. Vance made back during the campaign, well, school shootings are just a fact of life. And he apparently said, well, he didn't like it, you know, that he didn't like it, but we just have to admit that school shootings are a fact of life, and I just think that's one fact of life we need to nip in the bud.
Yeah, absolutely, Mark. I mean, that's it, and that's what we're talking about. Going, you know, no, it's not a fact of life we have to get used to. It's a fact of life that needs to not be a fact anymore. When when Vice President Elect Vance just proclaims it's a fact of life, and we got to get on with it. No, you know what? Yes, we know we have to do what we can, but just tuberculosis was also a fact of life.
How did you pronounce that?
Tuberculosis.
Tuberculosis.
Tuberculosis. I'm sorry, you know. Hey, I'm originally from Pittsburgh.
Sure, blame it on Pittsburgh.
But we want to stop it. And that's what we're saying. You know, we've done all of the protection safety plans. We've done it enough. You know, that's it. So now it's what are we going to do to stop it? And we need to insist on that. And, you know, you think about that. These are the conversations that we want to be having, is saying, no, this fact of life then needs to change, because this is a fact of life we're not willing to accept. And therefore, we, the people listening to this show out there who have the ability, talking to our elected officials, not even talking to them, demanding them that they move away from the multiple amounts of money that make them vote in favor of keeping our children and our teachers in a state of constant fear. No, that's unacceptable. You have to listen to me. I voted for you, not the moneyed interests that are trying to keep you in a state that just says we have to accept this as a fact. Oh, had a little rant there. Carrie, though. Oh, we can also announce we have a winner from the Text to Win. Jess, you want to do that?
Yeah, Carrie from Tosa. Congratulations on winning an overnight stay at Chula Vista. Have an amazing time. And if you want to get in on that, tomorrow, 4 p.m., tune in, hear another word, get another chance.
Nice. Appreciate that. So, yeah, Joanna, it's time. It's time to stop it.
Yeah, but you know what? Also hearing you talk, I do think that it's also, though, a big leap in a way of, you know, I just think there's a part of turning inward with all of this too, you know, and each of us asking ourselves what we can do and what we're doing to understand even, I guess, our own biology. You know, I always bring it back to the biology of the brain. And I think that's why I said earlier too, that I do continue to be shocked, because there is a level of need for all of us that I just don't see get addressed in our larger society and institutions. And that's just that kind of, again, understanding what brings people to a point like this. And then how do we heal and recover and repair from situations, rather than just saying, like, somebody somewhere better make it stop. That was just going through my head, you know, the whole, like, it is a little complex, and how I think what is manageable is what is, what's within each of us. And Yeah, so again, I know that sounds like my floofy flu.
No, I don't think it's floofy flu at all. I mean, you know, I'm going to take this hard line on. We need to make it stop. The other part, though, too, is, but you also point out another really important point, though, too, is what are those things that are driving, you know, people to become a quote school shooter? Mm-hmm. You know, that is, are we willing to look deep inward to say, you know, are there things so that we can do to stop somebody from going into the mental state that takes them to that level? And I think the answer is on that one too, is yes.
Yeah.
I just think
that right there's external things and there's internal things, and we've got to do both.
Mm-hmm. Number's 855-752-4842. Dr. Tim Slecker sitting in for Dom on the Dom Salvia Show. You know, special friend, Teacher Joanna from Educators Amplified. Time to move on, though, Joanna. It's just too much thinking about this, you know. But, you know, another question, though. When I say the word proficiency, kind of helping that, you know, what does proficiency mean?
No, you've been asking that question for a long time. We've got a long storied relationship with this word.
Yes, we do, because... You know, and if you think you know what proficiency means, jump right in for the show, because I want to hear it from somebody else out there. Proficiency, 855-752-4842. Dr. Tim Slecker sitting in for Dom. We'll be right back.
You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com.
I don't know. But I do know this is the Dom Salvia Show, and I am Dr. Tim Slecker from Busted Pencils, sitting in while Dom takes a little break. My favorite guest co-host, though, Educators Amplified, Teacher Joanna is with me. And, you know, enough is enough with the school shooting. Moving on to something, you know, where, yeah, a little bit of a Busted Pencils topic, but at the same time, something we should be out there. There was a piece, Teacher Joanna, you made me aware of in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Wisconsin parents deserve truth about their children's academic progress. This was submitted by Atressa Pankovitz. We'll get more into, you know, her background. But the reality that she kind of comes in here is that DPI under Jill Underley's leadership took what we call the NAEP scores and the qualitative classifications of how you're performing on the NAEP tests, which are achievement tests, typically fourth, eighth grade math and reading. And there's the proficiency is the word that NAEP uses as the top, the very best that you can get on a NAEP administered test. And at one point, Wisconsin's scores on the forward exam were somehow calibrated to be in line with the NAEP metrics. And so that when you say proficiency on a forward exam, that has the same connection to the proficiency on the NAEP. And Jill Underley and DPI said, wait a minute. We need to expand that because, and there's a really good reason, is that NAEP proficiency is aspirational. Teacher Joanna, you reminded me of this. Dr. Diane Ravitch reminds us this all the time, that when you're talking about NAEP, those qualities that go into that, particularly this word proficiency, proficiency is aspirational. It is not grade level. So when you hear somebody out there saying only one third of Wisconsin students are proficient, there's the assumption
on this specific test, on this specific, right, on this specific measure.
One third. So typically, though, then that could, two thirds of Wisconsin students are not proficient. And so, my God, grab the pearls, clutch them tight, because the world is coming to an end. Two thirds of students in Wisconsin can't read is what that turns into.
Yes. And my understanding of this, too, is that for whatever reason, I guess the Wisconsin proficiency levels were set according to NAEP. And then they recognized that that wasn't an accurate measure, because the Ford exam is based on Wisconsin state standards,
yes,
which are generated and created by groups of Wisconsin educators. So the Ford exam here in Wisconsin is generated by, like I said, by teachers in the field, diverse people throughout the state. And so the Ford exam is not based on any kind of NAEP standards. It's based on the Wisconsin state standards. And so that is the reason for the shift, saying we were using this tool that actually didn't measure what we're doing. But oh my gosh, I feel bad even giving that much airtime to that. In terms of you know, that I was recently reading something, again, back to my brain-based stuff, you know, from Dr. Bruce Perry, who's, you know, really known for his work around neurobiology and its impact on children. And he was talking about how, you know, actually observing children does the best job, rather than any kind of measure or brain, even brain scans. He's like when we scan, you know, their brains for like what's lighting up and this and that, like nothing is going to give you anything more accurate than to that child, like actual observation. And so I think about that with our general, you know, testing culture, let's say, that let's keep in mind that any test nowadays is pretty much computer driven. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And so there's something right there. It's one measure on one day. Mm-hmm. And but we really gets a lot of press, or it's a thing that people like to talk about. And I will say, like I said, as a near 30-year educator, I have like so tuned out on the products. That's a whole other
direction we can go. You know, coming back to this though, too, the author of that piece, though, has a real problem with the adjustment that DPI made. And to state this very simply, because the adjustment now shows more kids in Wisconsin are doing better.
Oh, we don't want that, yeah, do we?
Wow, that sounds awful. Make them
worse.
Gosh,
wait a minute. We've got numbers out there that say our kids are not so bad. And darn it, we want that old metric back in place that classifies kids more as failing, because nothing is going to stop a kid and a teacher from failing more than pointing it out, labeling them, making them march through the streets with their failed tests around their necks, because that is the way you create better learning situations. I'm sorry, but no. And so, you know, I really come back to, again, this piece from the author, and I want to just scroll down to the very end there to kind of get Tressa Pankovic. She's co-director of Reinventing Schools Project at Progressive Policy Institute, blah, 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 blah. take a look at that. And actually, this is an organization that advocates for the privatization and charterization of public schools. And how does that happen? That happens when we label schools as failing. And the quickest way to label schools failing is to hold that word proficiency and point out and yell, scream, and let everyone know that two-thirds of your students are not proficient. And therefore, guess what? We in the charter privatization world, we're here to help. We're here to help. And that is this too. And so pointing that out, I wanted to make that just part of that. And, you know, you can see actually my reactions. Go to the Civic Media website. I have a blog post up there right now that really takes some time to help people understand what's happening here. Because, Joanna, as you just pointed out, you know, if you really want to know, and remember, I came early on in learning to be a teacher, as you said, you know, back in the 80s, we knew then that the number one way that you could tell how a child was doing was watching them and sitting with them and interacting with them. You want the most accurate gauge of how things are going? Spend time with them.
Mm-hmm. I actually had a friend recently talk about how her daughter had just recently been diagnosed with having dyslexia, but had, and she's maybe in fourth or fifth grade now, but it had gone unnoticed all this time because the assessments are online and because the writing she does autocorrects. So because there wasn't enough of assessment of people literally sitting with and watching, you know, this was overlooked and not able. And again, and I don't fault the system and I don't fault the teachers. Like, this is kind of what, you know, this, the expectation is, or how testing now occurs. There's nothing better than, like, again, because it's going to be a number of things, right? There's a number when you get one measure, you get one observation, you're like, oh, I don't know if they're getting this. Then you throw something else, right? And then you're like, no, but they do. They get this part, but not this part. You need multiple measures.
You do. And you made me think of that though, too. And in the reality of how much weight though and trust those quote test scores garner, when ask any teacher who might go, you know what, I know that's what he or she scored on that test, but that's not what I see in class. And the reality of that professional judgment, observation, skill, expertise in this era, you know, let's talk about it, since early 2000 No Child Left Behind era, no, that doesn't qualify as a legitimate assessment. We don't care what you see. We don't care how you interpret the child. We need objective measures, high stakes tests. And think about that and going like, whoa.
When I do think about it, I think about how many problems it caused. Yeah. When I was doing a really like standardized online program, it caused so many problems. It literally on a specific day would tell a kid they were a 12th grade reading level. Then the next day it'd tell them they were a third grade reading level. I mean, there's just so many variables again. And one of them being the actual child, right? And like, I found that it caused problems for the child themselves, right? Mm-hmm. Like they then either thought they were like doing way better than they were or way worse than they were. It caused problems with communicating to the family what was really going on, because a lot of times parents do link children's poor performance to just effort. And so when kids were, for whatever reason, just getting a bad score because of all these different variables, likely not actually due to their skill level, but then the parent would be like, why aren't you trying? And yes, it's so much, it's the real deal. First of all, like if you went to your doctor and they were just like, okay, go sit on the computer over there and do some things. And then they looked at just that not like a blood scan, but they just were like, hey, go sit on the computer and answer those questions. And then they were like completing their whole diagnosis and treatment plan for you based on that, right? You want to be looked at. You want to be asked questions. You want maybe somebody else to give their opinion. It's the same of what we need to be supporting and advocating in schools. And you are right. Since the early 2000s, when products really came heavily in to make sure everything was Common Core aligned, we really lost a lot of that, and we need to return to it.
Yeah. Producer Jess, I see you in animated there as we're talking.
Yeah, well, just thinking about this comparison that teacher Joanna has just made of, imagine going to a doctor's appointment and the survey that you take at the beginning, the paper screening, mm-hmm. if that was it, putting in your family history and maybe a couple symptoms that you've been experiencing, and that's it. From there, they're making the whole treatment plan. That does feel equivalent because that's taking a little tiny snapshot. It's mm-hmm. not looking at the complete situation. It's not getting a multidimensional view of what's going on. It gives you such mm-hmm. a flat read of something that can never be accurate, that can never lead to growth and continued sustainable being.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Jess. Yes.
It is. And that's it. You know, we want to make sure that everybody understands that. Because if you're out there and you're really concerned about how are the kids doing in school, and we saw this piece in the Milwaukee Journal, and my goodness, so many kids are failing, or maybe we don't know anymore. Come on, let's stop. Let's stop it. And again, come back to what I pointed out here, too. Who wrote the piece and what interest do they have in writing that piece and creating fear and skepticism of our schools? It is a privatizer that wants to see our public school system fail. Understand that and realize that's what we're dealing with here. There's so much more to go, though, with assessment. Teacher Joanna, though, I want a little bit more, though, about the passions that gets Teacher Joanna going. 855-752-4842. One more time when we get back.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back. It's the Dom Salvia Show. It's not Dom, it's Dr. Tim Slecker from Busted Pencils. Yeah, sitting in for Dom. Well, he gets a little break. Got my favorite, though, co-host, Teacher Joanna from Educators Amplified, joining me, talking. You know, we were talking everything NAEP proficiency assessment. People are listening going, oh my God, how boring of a topic was that? Hey, we just want to point out, though, the fact is that these are the types of weaponization things that are used to constantly be talking about how our public schools, how our teachers, how our kids are failing. It's a negative story that continues earnestly, and that this article that came out really wasn't calling attention to something horrible that we needed to be worried about. It was truly a piece in their own best interests, which is the continued failure of public schools and kids benefits the privatization, charterization movement in this country. And so
the narrative of failure.
The narrative of failure. But, you know, Joanna, but this moves, you know, and teachers is thinking about this, and I know the number one, you know, that creates a sense of stress and anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
when it comes to that, you've had, you know, what do we do? And I remember our first time we talked about it, you're like, what do you deal? How do you deal with regulation? I'm like, I hate regulation, because I quickly went into those are the rules that are making you. No, not that regulation. But, you know, so the mental well-being is what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. What does a teacher do then in this situation when they might hear from somebody saying, oh, you're one of those teachers that caused those low test scores?
Oh, goodness. Wow. I guess, again, we're kind of used to that narrative. And we have to then, you know, settle into ourselves and recognize we experience something very different when you're day to day in the classroom with children. You're experiencing something very different. You are seeing, again, strengths, imagination, creativity, innovation. So one, you've got to just, you know, own your own truth. But if I had to say, that's not to say everything's perfect. I think that, you know, maybe it was during the break, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm kind of really sick of hearing about like what kids need to do or what teachers need to do, because I think our focus right now needs to be broader. Mm. And I think even when you reflect on all the topics we talked about today, there's this larger issue in our schools and in our society. And to me, it's about public health, you know, and are we well in our, you know, what are we doing about youth wellness in terms of addressing chronic stress, you know? And again, nobody calls it these things. They call it, like I said, like bad kids or kids who can't pay attention, or, you know, students who are addicted to technology and high schoolers who are vaping in the bathrooms. But really, the root of all of that is, you know, these are all signs and symptoms of like not being imbalanced. And so I view a lot of, you know, I'm passionate about, and what does the teacher do? We always say, when you can't get into it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's like we really then try to study what is happening. And so people on the ground are doing that, you know. Teachers are being very, I would say, innovative. You know, they're paying attention to what's in front of them, and they are learning and trying to create the alternative in spaces, which is an education focus that brings into, you know, the whole child, the physical, the emotional, the social, and the intellectual. And right, I don't think that there's one proficiency test for all of those things that actually, you know, and I remember years ago, right? You and I, you used to say, well, in order to even get the, let's say, proficiency score, you need all those other things. I don't even want to make that argument anymore. It's just more like all of these aspects of child development are important.
You need all these things because you need all these things, not because you need them to get proficiency. You need them because they're human needs.
Good point.
Human.
You guys always make fun of my human. I'm sorry. It's a silent H in my world.
It's because he's from Pittsburgh.
It's from Pittsburgh, you know. Oh, man. Time goes so quickly. Teacher Joanna, thank you for hanging out with Jess and I as we, you know, give Dama a little time off and give him a break. Really having you here. Want to remind everybody, though, too. Yeah, you know, Busted Pencils, that's what we do. And tomorrow, right away, Wednesday, class is in session, huh, Jess?
Yes, it will be 6 a.m. That podcast will be available.
What do we have again tomorrow?
Dr. Jill Underly, Superintendent Jill of Public Underly. Instruction.
That's right. Yeah, she will be on there, you know, on the podcast. And Friday, face-offs, you know, first face-offs.
Free throws and face-offs.
And, yeah, and then Saturday, too, you know, the show live across all of Civic Media. Well, not live, but recorded. But 3 o'clock all across Civic Media Saturday. Busted Pencils for one full hour. Make sure you're there. Everybody else out there, though, listening to the Dom Salvia show, thank you for hanging out with us. Have a great evening. Get out there. Do something meaningful. It is the season, as we said. Jess, Teacher Joanna, thanks. Everybody, have a great night. See you next time.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.